The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford College. Good afternoon, this is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway, and today my special guest is Mary Light. She is a traditional naturopath who also practices iridology, among other things. I know it's all about natural health and all that good stuff, but we're going to be talking about iridology today. So I just want to say, hi Mary, how are you?
Hi, I'm great, thank you.
Great, I'm glad you're able to do the show. Now, let's just get started with the basics. What is iridology?
Okay, iridology is the study of the iris. It can also be called maybe iris assessment. And the idea behind it is you look at the iris, not the entire eye, but just the colored part of the iris, under magnification. And the easiest way to do that is with maybe a 10x or a 12x loop, and a small flashlight that is not pointing at the eye, but to the side of the eye to give a little light. So the practitioner takes a look at the iris, and different colorations and patterns tell the practitioner about interior tissue states, and they can use this to sort of get information about the internal body systems of that particular person.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does that show a person, though? I mean, if you looked into somebody's eyes, what kind of things could you determine?
Well, one thing that you cannot determine, I should just get this out of the way, it is not meant to diagnose medical disease. So, you know, we're usually brought up to think of health and health care in terms of allopathic medical disease and diagnosis. You can't look at an iris and say, oh, it looks like you have gallstones or diabetes or,
right,
or something like that.
Or cancer or whatever.
Right. What you can see are pigments that may tell you that a pancreas or kidney or liver are strained and overburdened. So you see colorations and pigments that have meaning, and patterns and markings. One of the ways that we work with iridology at the school is by identifying constitutions. So there, a constitution is a pattern, and through those patterns we can help people understand, you know, their basic traits, and therefore what would be a good diet for that person, what herbs may come into play to help them heal. You know, general traits, for example, Ayurveda has constitutions, and, you know, Pitta, Vata, and Kapha. These constitutions break up into about 9 different patterns. So that's, iridology begins to tell us internal tissue strengths and weaknesses. Not all strengths, but also weaknesses. So instead of looking at the human body as, you know, a genetic code written in stone, and you're stuck with your traits, and if your mother had it and your grandmother had it, you're going to have it. We look at these weaknesses. Let's see how we can strengthen them, and then let's also look at the strengths and tell the person about their strengths.
Mm-hmm. So you could tell if someone were allergic to perhaps dairy products or something like this.
Well, not so much that. I'll give you an example. There is an iris constitution. So I'm looking at the iris, and immediately a pattern comes through. it's kind of like the difference between listening to the radio and knowing that you're listening to jazz versus classical. You can identify the pattern and you can say, oh, that's jazz, you know, that's rock and roll, or that's classical. So I'll just throw that analogy out there. I'll throw a couple of other ones out there as we talk. So one of the constitutions, it appears that there are radial lines, like the spokes of a wheel, coming out around the iris. And then there are, in addition to that, there are sort of concentric rings. And that particular iris constitution is called anxiety gastric. So the person has weaknesses and vulnerabilities between the relationship between their nervous system and their digestion. So that tells us right away, well, this person has to take special care of their emotions and their nervous system, particularly in relation to when they're digesting. Otherwise, they're going to experience problems in their life. So our job is to help them overcome these problems and help them essentially have preventative health. And if they're already suffering from something, we can help them go towards the diet that will be healing for them, and help them use herbal formulas that will be healing for their digestive system, for their nervous system, that sort of thing. So there's actually an entire iris system based on what we recognize when we take a look at the iris that can guide us to bring that person into a better state of health.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned heredity. Now, if you looked into a person's eye, could you see something coming up perhaps that might be a situation that needs to be addressed further on down the line?
Yes, in that sense, not necessarily in the medical diagnosis sense, but for example, I'll give you a kind of a good example of heredity. I was doing iris assessments at a health food store a few years ago, and an entire family came in to see me. And they were all from Mexico. They were all very closely related. So they had common heredity, and they all had the same iris constitution. And so that trend of health ran through their whole family. There was a grandmother, mother, children. What I could tell them is that they needed to pay special attention to their digestion, to their circulatory system. Because these two systems in that particular constitution that they did inherit were going to be, you know, the ones to watch for, the weaknesses, so that if they stopped eating traditional foods, for example, and started eating a lot of, you know, junk food and sodas and things like that, they could tend towards blood disorders, cardiovascular disorders, possibly diabetes with the digestive component that showed up as weaknesses in their constitution. Another example is just a person has two different parents, and often the characteristics of one parent will show up either more dominantly or even very equal in a given person. So, you know, if one parent does, you mentioned allergies, definitely there is an iris constitution that tends towards more allergies. That happens to run in my family. And I don't have that as a dominant constitution. I have the more digestive weaknesses, you know, as mine. So we can't really say you have allergies, but we can say if your weaknesses overtake you rather than your strengths, and we don't protect those weaknesses, you may develop different kinds of maladies like allergies, tissue weaknesses, weaknesses of the spine, nervous system weaknesses, that sort of thing. And of course, all of those things lead to disease. So that's the role that I think iridology has in helping people improve their health and heal and maintain their health.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do your own examinations on yourself? Is that possible?
Well, it's possible. It's possible now with newer equipment. When I was studying this about 18 years ago, the sort of fancy equipment was really out of most people's price ranges. You know, it was $3,000 or $4,000 to get an iris camera and set it up and sort of prop your chin in the in the apparatus, take a look at your iris. I don't usually look at my own irises. I have someone else do it. But now we have less expensive equipment coming out of China, actually. And it's very easy to take a very good magnified photo of the iris and even show it up on a computer monitor so that we can sit there with a person with a laptop or even a phone, and they get a very good picture of their iris. And it's very different looking than if you're just looking at them. You really need the magnification and the light to be able to see these details with an iris assessment.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Mary Light. She is a traditional naturopath who practices iridology, and that's what we're practicing, or I should say discussing today. Now, let's skip to a little bit of your background. Exactly what is a naturopath?
Well, the simple definition is a person who studies how natural sciences affect health and utilizes natural, non-invasive, non-drug, non-surgical means to help another person or themselves attain a higher level of health. So those means would be diet, making sure that the diet is the most supportive it can be of healing, body work or massage, we sometimes call it, but there are other kinds of body work. So those are two methods. Herbal medicine, herbal therapeutics, that's three. Hydrotherapy is something that we use, you know, applied thermal therapy, so saunas, compresses, foot soaks, baths have a very powerful effect in improving health. We don't see them used as often because they, you know, they aren't used in the medical profession, but we use them on a deeper level as naturopaths. Other methods that naturopaths use are energy balancing and energy medicine. They may use flower essences. They may use definitely movement therapies. You know, perhaps I wouldn't teach someone a movement myself, but I might refer them and say, you know, in order to get well, you're really going to have to, you know, join a gym or go to a yoga class or a Nia class, and you're really going to have to do some movement to get your blood going, and it's part of the healing, very important part. And education and counsel is a big part of our work. We really spend time with people, listening to them, doing an interview, doing an in-depth health intake and interview, and then helping them understand, you know, how can I make these changes? How can I put them into my life? That isn't something that people get when they go to an allopathic medical doctor. They usually get a prescription, you know, and they're in the office for a few minutes maybe, and you know, but they're not really getting education to help them change lifestyle habits. So we do a lot of that too. So a traditional naturopath works with those very classical means of helping people heal.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a real medical degree or position per se?
Well, a medical degree would be studying a medical curriculum. So medical schools do have their own curriculum, and they have their own way of working and their own way of diagnosing and treating. But as we know, there are other ways to bring about health and heal. So, you know, the medical world has become very rarefied, let's just say, over the past 100 years. There are politics around that. There are politics and medical science that define a medical curriculum. And so instead of, for example, trying to diagnose something so that I can prescribe a drug, that isn't what we're trying to study here. We're trying to understand the human body holistically and how the different body systems interact and create an internal ecology. And it's a very different way of studying health and healing than that which is presented in medical schools. So, you know, being non-medical, you know, can be a good thing. Mm-hmm. For example, in Chinese medicine or someone who's studying acupuncture, they're studying a very specific way of healing as well. They're not studying allopathic medicine. So, you know, it does require study, and it does, the practice requires study and academic rigor and ongoing study and continuing education. But the short answer is no, it's not a medical school.
Mm-hmm. Do you have like a certificate or some kind of diploma showing that you've received this training?
We do. We actually, here in Michigan, we're listed as a state licensed school to issue a diploma as under naturopathic medicine. We prefer the term traditional naturopathy because there is another branch of naturopaths. There are some schools mostly set out in the western part of the country who do orient towards more of a medical codex and a biomedical curriculum. So there really are two branches of naturopathy. That's kind of a generic term, you know, much like music and art are generic terms. So we're traditional naturopaths, and that's what we want to study and uphold and develop. But there is a more medical orientation. They really are medical schools, and they're becoming more and more medical. I think the medical naturopaths now in some states are able to write prescriptions and do minor surgery. That isn't what we do.
Mm-hmm. How did you receive your training?
Well, you know, when I was studying, there weren't any real naturopath schools established. We're at a point in history where this is emerging, and some of the people who are, you know, more old-timers, shall we say, like maybe myself, I started studying over 20 years ago, really just found teachers who were teaching naturopathy and naturopathic methods. So between several different educational endeavors, I studied at the Florida Institute of Natural Health, and I learned a lot of body work, massage, and hydrotherapy, and received, you know, certificates in those fields. And then I studied at the School of Natural Medicine, which is located in Boulder, Colorado. That is actually where I studied iridology initially. I studied with various different energy medicine teachers, with Carolyn Neath, with polarity teachers, lots of continuing education, studied for probably 30 years as an independent scholar in herbal medicine. So it was kind of a patchwork method of putting together an education. And when I got to, you know, the point where I was practicing and had been practicing for over 10 years, then I just said, you know, I'm ready to start a school. We need a school where other people who are looking for a school, you know, we're not going to have, you know, the old naturopath is sort of dying off. You know, Dr. Jensen is gone. Many of the older teachers are starting to leave the planet. So I'm really happy to see that more schools are being established, and there is a movement for more schools to be established, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's moving in the positive direction then, right?
It is. It is moving in a positive direction. I mean, like anything else, there's a backlash. People, there'll be naysayers. And one of the things that I would like to say is that these types of methods, and I think some of us are probably familiar with web pages like SkepDoc or QuackWatch, where every single alternative and holistic method is decried and, you know, debased. The truth is, we work with practice-based evidence that people have been practicing for a really long time, you know, hundreds of years in some cases. This is, you know, cultural, indigenous, global medicine. And medical science is fairly new, and medical science is really limited to medical, allopathic medical studies. So sometimes you'll hear, well, that's never been studied. I think what gets studied is something profitable, and like the newest drug. This has been studied, actually. Let's go back to iridology. Iridology has been extensively studied in Germany by medical doctors there, and there are lots of studies, and there are a lot of iridology societies all over the world. So for decades, iridologists have been watching people, doing case histories, applying protocols, meeting for conferences, and that's how the body of work has developed through those kinds of efforts.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get interested in this particular field?
Well, I think I just always was interested, and I was very interested in healing, herbal medicine, and energy work. And then as I studied with various other teachers, different other levels of interest kind of took root. I became very interested in body work and meditation and yoga at around 1990, you know, and studied that for a number of years and saw how that gave me the understanding of how I could work with people better, how I could understand what they were feeling, what their body was feeling. So one thing just led to another, and I followed my interests, and you know, now we have potential students looking for that too.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I going to study this?
Mm-hmm. So it just felt right to you to pursue this?
Absolutely. It did feel right. I think what really initially legitimized it for me, because again, it's not a mainstream part of our social fabric, was, you know, going to massage school, being with like-minded people. I studied at Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Lenox, Massachusetts. And we're talking about hundreds of people being at the center, you know, all for the same reason, and studying under really excellent teachers with, you know, really excellent backgrounds. So, you know, being able to study in depth yoga and meditation and body work really legitimized all of it for me, and I just felt very confident that I'd be able to practice. At the time, people would say, why are you doing that? You know, why are you
why are you wasting your time,
think,
right?
No. I felt at the time, and a lot of our students today were just really propelled by an inner personal belief that that's what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Help people in that way.
Right. When you were starting, though, were you chastised by maybe family members or your friends, you know, asking you, why are you doing this?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I was. Sure. In one way or another, I had, before I started doing this, I had a catering business in a resort, well-known resort area, and you know, that seemed, oh, that's a lucrative idea, you know, that you like that, why aren't you doing that anymore? Yes, people would say, they would get massage mixed up with, you know, sort of escort service type.
Yeah,
massage.
Right, yeah. A different kind of massage.
Society. But it has grown, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It has. I mean, right now, massage therapy is a licensed profession in Michigan and probably more than 35 other states. So sure, there were certainly people that thought that was a second-class thing to study, but you have to be strong.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if it's right for you, you know it.
Or me?
I was just saying that if it's right for you, you know it, and you want to pursue it. You know, you can't really listen to other people and what their opinions are. You have to do what feels right for you.
Well, not only that, but the validation from helping other people. And really, you know, people who have been in pain for a long time, and then a very simple holistic thing is getting them out of it, is the solution. And to want to perpetuate that and to continue and to support that and to allow that to grow in society, that is really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Once again, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My guest this month is Mary Light. She is a traditional naturopath, and we're more or less talking about iridology, which we'll get back to in a minute. Now, when you started practicing, again, did people seem to think that it wasn't really a practical thing for you to involve yourself with?
Well, I mean, not everybody thought that. And actually, by the time I started studying this, I was, I wasn't that young anymore. I had done some things in the business world, and I could hold my own. And I could, I could basically say, look, this is what I'm doing, and look all there is to it. I don't think it was, very hard.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started to study iridology, did you realize that was something that really interests you?
No, actually, I didn't. I was a little resistant to the idea, and it was new to me. But as I realized how this particular system interacts so holistically with the diet a person follows, with the herbs that they might take, with any body work or energy work or even meditative and mental practices that they might undertake, I realized how holistic it was and how important it was to know this, to study this. I mean, this was sort of, I'm sure when people study music or go to medical school, there are certain aspects of their curriculum that they, I don't really like that part, but later when they get older and a little more mature and a little more practiced in the work, they realize the value of it. So I had I had sort of a fascination with it, but I thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to use this, but I did. And I think just working with people and really seeing the change in their iris. This is something we haven't talked about yet. You look at somebody's iris and you take a picture. If they improve their diet, of course, sometimes they don't improve, they get worse, but if they improve the various habits that lead to better health, the iris picture that you take 6 months later is bound to look very, very different. And when they can see the contrast between those two pictures of the iris, that's very validating. I mean, you can't really argue with that. You mm-hmm. can't really say, well, nothing's happened here, because the person feels better, some of their symptoms are gone, maybe all of their symptoms are gone, and the iris looks different.
Mm-hmm. Do you show your patient a picture of the difference, a before and after type thing?
When I was just learning, we didn't have that type of equipment, so we learned how to draw and use drawings of irises. Now we can show them. Now I was mentioning a little earlier about the cameras that are, that are available on the market for affordable prices. We can show them pictures. We can email them pictures. They can print out pictures. And they can see the changes in their iris if they do something like colon cleansing or several months of work on their nervous system or some work with their urinary system or their respiratory system. They can actually see the changes in the iris in the photograph in the area of the body where the system is.
Mm-hmm. Are you surprised sometimes with the changes?
Well, it's always surprising, I think. When I was first in school, we were shown pictures. We were shown slides at the time. I think the year was 1997. And so people still looked at slides then.
Yeah.
And We were shown slides of before and after, you know, before treatment, somebody comes to the iridologist, the naturopath, they're not feeling well, they have symptoms, and then the naturopath practitioner guides them and puts them on a program of rejuvenation, and the before and after pictures, or even the progress, you know, the progression, were quite surprising in some people. They just really were. I was colors would change, different areas of toxicity that looked really dark initially would clear up and brighten. My teacher's daughter, Farida's daughter, was struck by lightning at one point.
Wow.
And we saw some pictures of, you know, before that happened, after it happened, and then perhaps a year or two after that happened. And there were great changes in the, you know, the sort of fabric of her iris. Right after the lightning strike, the fabric of her iris was sort of a zigzag pattern, and then it straightened out. So that reflects directly with the nervous system and the central nervous system. So the iris grows from the brainstem during fetal development. And so anything that's happening in the nervous system and in the human body actually becomes visible to us in that iris tissue. That's how it works, basically.
Mm-hmm. And that changes with age. I mean, as a person gets older, different things are able to be seen in the iris?
Well, the basic constitution, you're born with it. So I can look at a, you know, a little infant, about 6 months old, and see that that's the constitution that that little person is going to have for the rest of their life. But in terms of aging, yes, there are some changes. There are some changes, like say, between infancy and when you're in your 80s and 90s that are part of age, but the basic constitution and the colors are the same.
Mm-hmm. Does it make a difference if it's a brown-eyed person, blue-eyed? Does it matter what color their eyes are at all?
Brown-eyed people tend to have certain types of constitutions that correlate more with cardiovascular and digestive issues, and mixes of blue and brown, you know, blue parent, blue-eyed mother, brown-eyed father, that sort of thing, that will have certain constitutional aspects. And then blue-eyed people tend to have more lymphatic system, immune system, skin issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the color of the eye does make some of a difference. It doesn't make, you know, all of the difference. People can have blue eyes and brown eyes and still share some strengths and weaknesses together.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really matter particularly what color a person's eyes are then, right?
Well, you know, in the early days of iridology, before we had really good equipment to be able to see details in more depth, there were writings. We're going back 100 years here with somebody like Henry Lindbar, who, you know, over 100 years ago was an iridologist in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So he contributed a lot to the field. You know, there were certain ideas of really stark differences between brown-eyed and blue-eyed people. It even got to the point where, you know, he had to kind of get beyond certain levels of eugenic opinions. So that's 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two basic kinds of iris color, brown eye and a blue eye. But, of course, we have all kinds of people with, you know, I have gray eyes, I have hazel eyes, I have green eyes. People feel that that's what their eye color is. But basically, it's brown and blue and mixes thereof. And any pigments will make the eye appear to be a hazel or greenish or grayish. Sometimes those pigments will clear up. For example, person with sort of a grayish blue eye may do some rejuvenation and improve their nourishment, improve their diet, improve the strength of their body systems. And 6 months to a year later, they'll have a brighter blue eye because that's really their color.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be really interesting.
Right. Now, when you look at a person's eyes and you see what you see, so to speak, do you refer to a chart or something that gives you an indication of what's going on, you know, by the reflection in that person's eyes?
Right, we do. There are a number of different kinds of charts. They all, to the sort of untrained eye, no pun intended, they all look kind of similar, but different practitioners in the field have developed them. And so they look like a hologram of the human body.
Mm-hmm.
We do look at a chart. If I notice a marking, I will look at the chart to understand where in that hologram is this marking. Is this a weakness in the lungs? You know, is it a dark mark in the thyroid? And that gives me something to go on. That gives me a way to, you know, conceptualize an assessment for that person. Not a diagnosis, but an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some iridology charts, and Dr. Bernard Jensen, who was just a fabulous naturopath and iridologist up through his mid-90s, actually developed some software towards the end of his life. And so that software can be plugged in or raked over an iris, and we can get more accuracy than mm-hmm. we ever had before due to that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that helps, correct?
Well, it is helpful. It's helpful. I mean, there's definitely an intuitive component to some of this as well. And there are branches of iridology. There's something called the RAYID method, R-A-Y-I-D, developed by a practitioner, where the emotional life of a person has been studied to see how it shows up in their iris. You know, what is their relationship to their inner world? What is their relationship to the outer world? Did they have lamas or relationship with one or the other parent? You know, it can get very psychological. But that isn't classical iridology, but that's one outgrowth of looking at the iris holistically and coming up with an interpretation that can help the person understand their health better.
Mm-hmm. And just to let everyone know again, this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Mary Light. She's a traditional naturopath, and she practices iridology, which is what we're talking about primarily on today's show. Now, when you look at somebody's eyes, are there certain areas of the eye that correspond to different areas of the body?
Yes, there are, and that's where the chart comes in. But simply, you know, a simple way of addressing it, the top of the eye, so the part that is superior towards the forehead, that reflects our cerebral, our head and brain area, and even our mental area. The lower part of the iris are reproductive and urinary system organs are placed in that part of the chart. The pupil, so that's the way inner part of the iris, and the areas directly around the pupil, so concentrically, they relate to our core, you know, our digestive system, our small intestine, our autonomic nervous system. And then as you go out from the inner part of the pupil, well, actually the pupil itself, directly relates to the central nervous system. So if the pupil is very, very large, sort of pancake looking, I know right away that person is really exhausted inside their internal ecology. They may be running around doing all kinds of things in their life every day, but their exhaustion is internal. And then as we move out from the center and go out towards the periphery, we get into other body systems like the spine, muscular system, lungs, thyroid, different endocrine glands. And then at the edge of the iris corresponds to the skin.
So basically it's all covered, all different types and all different parts of the body, right?
All different parts of the body are absolutely covered. And, you know, some people really study this into a very detailed level. I had a teacher in Colorado once who, you know, came and talked to us, students at the time. And he could see specific little fibers. So you look at an iris and it's just full of fibers. You know, that's sort of the pattern of the iris. He could see specific fibers that were slightly raised and slightly whitish, and he could tell that those particular people were maybe doing a little too much recreational drugs, for example, and they were. You know, so our body is affected by what is put inside of it. It's affected by environmental poisons and toxins. It's affected by toxicity that our elimination system cannot get rid of. So many different things can come up in different levels of detail. The constitution that we were talking about is the first level of detail that we teach students. And in fact, we do have a class coming up that would be open to people who are interested. Very basic iridology.
And when is that going to be?
It is May 20th. And it's listed on our website so that if we talk about that at the end of our interview, they can look for themselves. But yes, the body systems are all represented on the iris map.
So in essence, the eyes are the mirror of a person's soul. Is that correct, or is that what you think?
Well, you know, it's correct in the sense that, you know, we're incarnated and we're living in this environment, you know, and we're living in it for our lifetime. I think the Rayed method that I talked about earlier, where the psychological and emotional nuances are studied, that is another part of the, you know, the mirror of the soul, if you will. My teacher, Rita, was really pretty good at that. She could take a look at your irises and just, people would break down sobbing, you know, with the sort of reading she would tell them about their relationships, say, with their parents.
Really, she could tell that much? She could tell that much into a person's eyes by just looking at them?
Well, you know, I think that what we do in life does get etched into us one way or another, and the eyes are part of where it gets etched, if you will.
Right. Now, when you're working with a patient, what's the first thing you look for?
With iridology?
Iridology, yes.
You look at their constitution. I look to identify their constitution. That gives me a real foundation. The second thing I might look for are special markings or pigments. And then I relate that to their intake, you know, their the interview. They fill out a form about their health. We talk about that. I did have a sort of a funny story. Some years ago, when I was living in Maryland, sort of a very elderly farmer man came to see me. People are really interested in this, and all kinds of people are, and that's why they come to us. And he wanted an iris reading, and I said, well, tell me about your health. Tell me about your concerns. And he said, no, that's what you're supposed to do for me. You take a look, and you tell me. And I said, okay. You know, the gauntlet has been thrown. And so I did. I took a look in his iris, and I saw some different things and some different indications in the different areas of the body system. And I started talking to him about it. And he just was nodding and nodding. And I won't go into the specifics here, but I was right. And some of the problems that he was having did show up. And it validated for him that strengths and weaknesses were showing up in his iris. So we talked a little bit about what he could do, you know, to overcome some of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you sometimes surprise or amaze people with the information you can tell them by looking in their eyes?
Well, I think sometimes it validates for them what they already know, because I do think people know more about their health than our sort of dominant healthcare system gives them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
They're living in the body.
Right.
They're feeling how they feel. And so that validation is inspirational to people. It will help them decide to maybe take better care of themselves or follow an herbal protocol. Sometimes they're surprised, but usually, we're just telling them, for example, we might tell them, you have a lot of digestive problems. Well, they already know that, but what they're really coming to a practitioner for is, how do I resolve this? How do I get better?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have our suggestions and our ways to help them. That could be a lot better than having part of your colon resectioned, for example.
Yes. Yeah, that does beat the alternative.
Pardon me?
That does beat the alternative. I mean, to have part of a colon operated on or whatever, if you can kind of nip it in the bud, so to speak, or anything to assist a person in living a better and healthier life.
Absolutely. Many people come for wellness and rejuvenation and just simply wanting a perspective to nudge them into a healthier life and to have some guidance with that. So what a practitioner could do is to take an initial iris photograph, discuss what is going on with that particular picture at that point in time, give some recommendations, guide the person, do some follow-ups, and then show them 3 months, 6 months later, a second iris picture and discuss the differences.
Mm-hmm.
That's one way of having a relationship with your client and inspiring them.
Now, how often do you recommend a person, once they first get checked out, do they come back on a regular basis, or is it just as needed, or how does that work?
Well, it depends on what they're working on and what they're motivated to work on. But definitely, when someone comes to a naturopath, they always come for a reason, even if it is just improving wellness and it isn't really for a bad or chronic health condition. So we do recommend a follow-up so that we can check to see how they're doing and discuss any of the protocols with them, if they're having any difficulty with it. A lot of what we do, is helping people change habits and take new habits into their life. So that even that can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Just even changing your diet and taking certain herbs 2 or 3 times a day can be a very new thing for people. So the follow-up might be, come back in 2 weeks, and then we'll check. We can do Skype and email follow-ups as well.
Mm-hmm.
You don't always have to see the person, which I think is a positive aspect of this kind of healthcare.
Right.
Modern we have technology. Their information. We have the relationship with them. Some of the questions that need to be asked don't need to be asked in person. But in terms of taking a look at an iris picture again, I think we would look for changes within 3 months, and then more changes maybe another 3 to 4 months after that. It really depends on what they're working with. I mean, they might be working with several things, several layers of, it might be something like chronic fatigue layered with irritable bowel syndrome, layered with nervous system disorders and insomnia and thyroid imbalances. Because an inner ecology is going to be that way. It's not a fractured diagnosis while ignoring the rest of the body. There are usually several things going on when somebody isn't feeling well.
Right. So do you suggest an annual checkup? I mean, if everybody's healthy, to at least come in once a year perhaps and get their eyes looked at?
even more frequent than that, you know, take a look at your irises. I think taking a look at your irises and talking to a naturopath is just inspirational. It's a touchstone. What am I doing in my life? What's going on with me? So maybe twice a year, you know, just as a, well, you know, I'd like to take a look and see how my irises are going. I recently took a second look at mine, and, you know, I see some changes and some surprising things going on that alerted me both to work that I needed to do. So there was that. But also work that had been done compared to the previous iris photograph. Got rid of a lot of toxicity and improved my nervous system quite a bit from my initial iris reading. So that was really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And once you put the changes in effect where either a patient or you have to go through, can you really tell a difference?
In the iris picture?
Well, no, not so much. Just in the overall health of a person and how they respond to the information you provide to them, because like you said, it does take change, and change takes effort, and sometimes people aren't willing to do that.
Oh, sure. Sometimes they're not, you know, and if they don't, that still doesn't mean that allopathic medicine helps them. I mean, pain management and managing diet. If you're managing diabetes, you're not healing it, okay? So these people that are always taking pills for things like their thyroid and diabetes, when you can go to the root of it and actually help heal the person, we're legislatively not allowed to say that, but it can happen. You know, it can and does happen. Are there people who won't make the changes, whether it means quitting smoking and changing diet and not eating a lot of donuts or whatever it is? Yes, there are people. But can we inspire them? Yes, we can. And some people have, I mean, people that come to alternative and holistic practitioners are usually motivated to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen people overcome all kinds of things that medicine couldn't help them with because it didn't give them a way to get any better.
Right. Well,
issues. Sleep issues with poor sleep quality and insomnia, weight loss, reproductive issues, fertility issues, just plain vitality and quality of life is huge. And that never gets focused on in the allopathic medical paradigm as much. The focus is on pathology. But we can see pathology, potential pathology developing, we can see that, and we can say, you know, this could get worse and then turn into this. Let's not have that happen. You know, there are people, for example, that have come with gallbladder problems, and maybe they've had a few gallbladder attacks, and they have been told that they have to have their gallbladder removed. We can heal the gallbladder. You know, we can do castor oil packs and different kinds of cleanses and dietary regimens. The gallbladder is a piece of tissue, you know, so we can heal tissue. We can make tissue stronger and more resilient and help it be unburdened. And that's the work of, you know, a traditional naturopath. That's the potential there, so that instead of always feeling like everything that's wrong with you is written in stone and it's not going to get any better, it can get better if we actually work on it and help the person.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's also the fact that you offer new and different options for a person that maybe, like you said earlier, they've gone to the traditional doctor and they've used Western medicine, but perhaps some of the things you offer them might be a little bit different that really does hit home and really does help them.
Right, exactly. I'm not dismissing conventional allopathic medicine out of hand. There are times when it is just the thing, and particularly, you know, in trauma and broken bones and accidents and things like that. or when surgery really is needed. But I don't know that all surgeries are really needed. I don't know that the time is taken, the time and effort is taken to heal things like gallbladders and uteruses and, you know, what have you, the tonsils, the things that get taken out. And that does take time and effort. It's not something that's taught in medical school. So I think we're at a point where people are just starting to wake up to that. I don't think they fully trust it yet, you know, mm-hmm. because they were told all their life, there's nothing we can do for you.
Right.
We're at an interesting point historically with all of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, who really developed the modern study of iridology? Is there any one or two particular people that really helped motivate the field and, you know, had it progress to a certain level that it's reached today?
Well, the short historical story is that, and you know, you people can sort of look this up and read about it, is that roughly, I think, 100 years ago or so, I'm not really sure of the exact time frame, but a doctor in Germany or some Eastern European country, noticed some markings in an owl of all things, so a bird, an owl, that was injured, and noticed that the marking in the owl correlated to the side of the body it was injured on. And the doctor became curious, and the owl healed, and so did the marking go away. And so that was sort of the apocryphal story that keeps getting repeated. And I think that to some extent it happened. That all that is observing. All that is that's basic science. You're observing something happening, cause and effect, and then you become more curious and you want to study it more. So people did study it more over the years. And methods such as iridology and iris assessment and even reflexology actually show up in much more ancient cultures than 100 years ago. They show up in Chinese medicine. So fast forwarding to a more modern time, Bernard Jensen, for example, for decades developed the study of iridology and developed iris maps. There were different iridology pioneers all over the world. There was Dorothy Hall. There was Dr. Bernard Jensen. My teacher, Farida Sharan, is an international iridologist who goes to conferences and teachings all over the world. And so these people and their colleagues, because I'm sure there are many others that I'm not mentioning here, have really contributed their lives to very intricate studies, publishing and writing textbooks, many, many hundreds and thousands of case histories being followed, improving tools, improving assessment tools, and comparing notes, and just, you know, really developing the science of iridology.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well established in Europe, in the United Kingdom, in Germany, in Austria, in Switzerland. We have a different political makeup here.
Yes, we do.
We also have iridologists here. I think I read recently that there were 20,000 practitioners in Germany alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, how could they do so?
They could contact the school, which I could give you that information if you'd
yes,
like
go ahead.
Okay, it's Naturopathic School of the Healing Arts. It is in Ann Arbor. It has a website, naturopathicschoolofannarbor.net.
Okay, is there a telephone number or anything you want to give out?
Yes, it is 734-769-7794.
Okay, well, great. Thank you very much, Mary, for being on the show today. I do appreciate it. I really enjoy talking about iridology with you. Thank you once again for being on the show.
Thank you, too.
Well, once again, I would just like to thank my guest, Mary Light, who is a traditional naturopath, for talking about iridology here on Metaphysically Speaking for this month. And as they always say, the eyes have it, and that applies to iridology. So I hope you enjoyed the interview. Very interesting stuff. Once again, I want to thank Mary Light. I also want to thank Brandon McKay for helping me produce this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I always appreciate his help. And here's something else that's special that I want to announce. Coming up on March 21st will be our 7th annual, that's right, 7th annual Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. That's going to be from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. right here in the Student and Culinary Arts Center at Henry Ford College. Once again, we have a great group of vendors, readers, and body workers for you to enjoy. Also, we've got live music, and we've got some great speakers lined up as well. And this is all covered with your admission price of only $5. And of course, once you get in, if you get a reading or something, it might cost a little bit more, or it will cost a little bit more. But nevertheless, I'm sure you'll have a great time, and we'll have food for sale, so you won't pass out from hunger or anything like that. And we're going to have a labyrinth this year, and that's something that should be experienced if you get a chance. It's not really a maze. It's kind of a spiritual maze, a meditative maze. It's not something to trap you or anything like that, but it can be rather enlightening. So there you go. The Festival of Enlightenment, an enlightening experience. It all goes hand in hand. Anyway, be sure to join us Saturday, March 21st, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. right here at Henry Ford College in the Student and Culinary Arts Center for another Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair, and I do hope to see you there at the fair. With all that being said, I just want to say thank you for listening, and have a great day, everybody.